And the flirting, of course.
And the flirting, of course. Yeah, we got to work that in there. That's what people tune
just
in
to really throw people.
Yeah.
For.
Yeah.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, you! Yeah, I'm talking to you, sassy girl. Need a little in your step? Try this on for size. It's pop. It tastes great. It makes you feel kind of funny. Not here, not down there, but all up in this area.
Talking pop.
Sick and tired of hearing all these people talk about what's the deal with this pop life and when is it gonna fade out? The thing you got to realize, what we're doing is not a trend. We got the good, the melody, we're gonna bring it till the end. Come on now.
Hi, welcome to Talking Pop. My name is Jennifer Smith. I'm here with the captain to my Tennille, here to steer the ship for us tonight, Tim Cable. How you doing, Tim?
Ooh, I like it. Jennifer Smith. How do I get back there to the place where I fell asleep inside you, Jenny? How do I get myself back to that place where you said, welcome to Talking Pop?
That was beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, what have I been doing?
I'm all flushed now.
Oh, well, you're all flush. What have I been doing tonight, Jenny? You know what I've been doing?
What you been doing?
I think it's obvious from the comments I just made. I've been listening to the Songs with Friends podcast with our past guests, Steve Williams and Kelly Jean, where they covered, it was a great twofer, as they always have, Night Moves by Bob Seger.
Ooh.
Classic, of course. My God.
Sexy.
And Semi-Charmed Life by Third Eye Blind. I mean, really the soundtrack to the summer of 1998. I mean, it was in like every movie trailer, on the radio, nonstop. It was all you ever heard. And I just thought that was a nice sort of, way to set the stage for our show here tonight, because what are we talking about? We're talking about the summertime season and all that entails.
You know, much like our holiday episode that we did, sort of like reminiscing about our own past childhood holidays. So we're going to do that for the summertime.
Yep.
And I don't want to say like a guide that we did
for
Christmas, but maybe just some.
That was very much a kind of survival guide.
Right.
But I thought of this episode in the same vein as just a seasonal sort of sampler. Just like the fashions, you want to mix it up from time to time throughout the year. And I don't think a lot of folks need help necessarily making it through the summer, as they often do through the, winter holiday season. It's a good place setter. That's the way I look at it.
Let's just, I call this episode a hostful episode, which means it's full of hosts.
That's right.
You and me. And we are extra, to be sure.
Yes, we endeavor to be extra, and that's what we bring to you on Talking Pop. I mean, host or otherwise, with a guest or otherwise, but with just the two of us, all bets are off.
Yeah, pretty much.
The only promises we can make here.
When we were texting before the show, I was like, "Welp, good luck getting me through this shit because it has been a day, and so you'll have to steer the ship." And you were like, "No, I'm going to get a PWI."
Yes, I'm gonna get a podcasting while intoxicated. Yes, I we struggled with the nomenclature a little bit. And, the fact is that I've been trying to get in the mood here, and I've been quite successful in that. I hope that you have as well. And when you informed me that I would be steering the ship, I thought, well, can you get a DWI when you're steering a ship? I mean, we're talking different genres here.
That's true.
But we can get a PWI, and we will hopefully win the PWI awards here. That is, again, podcasting while
intoxicated. Yeah. Who would enforce such a thing? I don't know.
Who's to say? I mean, that's a managerial decision.
Right. I mean, wrestling Twitter seems to have a lot of opinions, so maybe we'll just let them decide.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag SCI. Mm-hmm. Talk about PWI, SCI. SCI, hashtag Heritage Room as well. Again, tune into our last episode, folks.
Oh, are we doing the prom thing?
More on Steve Kelly later. We'll get to that.
All right, yeah, we'll get to that. So, before we get to the summer part, I just want to talk about today.
Please do.
It was, you know, usually we're like, you know, we do this to, like, fuck shit junk and have fun and laugh and be silly, and it's a tension relief, right? It's a form of therapy, and I think that we both use humor a lot to diffuse any true emotions that we would try to have.
That's a fair statement.
Yeah, also we try to escape those emotions in many ways. But, you know, some days you just have a doo-doo shit day, and you're like, yes. You're like, I gotta go podcast tonight. And not act happy, but like actually get to that happy place that podcasting with you takes me, which is, you know, joy. It's joyful. I love it so much.
Right, right. So to how the sausage is made here, behind the curtains a little bit, we had planned this episode a few days, you know, we're professionals, right? So a few days in advance of this aforementioned doo-doo shit day. So we were on each other's calendars. This was planned. And what happened, Jenny?
Well, it's, you know, I have to, the summer just started, which, you know, I'm a stay-at-home mother. So that means that my son is with me now for 2.5 months.
And school year's over, right?
School year's over. We made it through another year. Okay. And so it's, you know, I love my son. Obviously, I love spending time with my son, but just knowing that I have to stretch this over 2.5 months is daunting, right? Like, you're sure. Like, okay. Luckily, we live in a cool place. There's things to do here. There's ways to keep him occupied. But, okay, my kid is weird. He doesn't have any friends. And so there, it's
relatable.
I mean, we've been here a year, and he just, it's not that the other kids don't like him necessarily, it's that he doesn't like other people. And
they're assholes. I mean, let's be honest.
It's really hard for me to like try to convince him to like other people when I know that like legit they probably get on his damn nerves because they're little kids. and he's such
an old soul. He's kind of cut from a different, yes, yeah, he's cut from different cloth. The old soul is a good way to put it. Yep, I've heard that a time or two.
He's been through so much in his life that he just, he's grown world weary at 9 years old. And I can't blame him. Like, things fucking suck. I mean, some things just suck. And finding that thing that gets you through the day is not always easy. And I try to be real with them, you know. I'm not one of those people that try to, like, sugarcoat things for their kids. I mean, I'm trying to make it better for him, but he still has to know the realities of things. Because to not know that is to be unprepared. And Lord knows we already have enough problems with that. So,
yeah.
I say that I can't just, like, plan a day like with a friend or whatever, or have him have sleepovers. I mean, there's nothing to distract him from me.
It's not as easy as it is necessarily for other folks. It's not so, oh, we can do this and everything's fine, because there's things that could potentially happen.
That right. I can't.
Other people would not be prepared for that. You have to be thinking about.
And like, I see all this stuff all the time, especially on Facebook. It's like, let kids be kids. You know, when we were growing up, we went and rode our bikes all day and we played outside all day. And there's this like nostalgic thing where you're supposed to, your kid's supposed to play sports and they're supposed to be straight A students and, have friends and like all these things that people wrap up in their own youths. But like, I can't, he can't do those things. And it is the way it is. And there's not much that I can do about it. I do what I can about it, but, he just physically, I can't send him to a day camp to go hiking, fishing, canoeing, and, you know, whatever they do at these camps that people send their kids
to. And without necessarily divulging details here, this is not a you being a helicopter parent or the parent situation. This is a health, very valid health reasons why your child cannot do certain things and have the same kind of very nonchalant experiences that you and I perhaps have that, you know, we see emphasized so very much on Facebook and, as you said, nostalgically talked about, that you sort of, I have to imagine you kind of resent it in a way because it comes from such a place of, I don't know, privilege, not to go on the whole thing, but I think you know what I mean, where it's sort of assuming a certain ableist kind of mentality. You know what I mean?
And if I'm being honest, a little bit of my chip on my shoulder about it comes from pure jealousy. A lot of times, even though everybody has their own, everybody has their own struggles. And, you know, I don't want to try to imply that my son is less than. It's just that a lot of people with his conditions, you know, do plenty of those things. It's just, he just can't. So I'm not taking anything away from those people who want to raise their kids that way, but just try to like not put it on me, you know, put that expectation on me or that pressure. It just feels that way, that I feel like he's missing out on so much, and he probably is, honestly, but I'm trying to like not make him feel that way and give him different yet equal experiences that will be his own version of that, you know.
And social media certainly doesn't help. I mean, I think 10 years ago, gosh, I can't even say 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, this wouldn't really be something we think about. Certainly there would be societal expectations and pressures, but it wouldn't be as like in your face all the time with the Facebook statuses and the fucking Instagram shit and the Snapchat and people kind of like humble bragging and just, I don't know, being very Pollyanna about their lives. Just, you know, you only see the best, you only see the parts of people that they want you to see on social media. I mean, this is the great, this is not an epiphany by any means. Like, I think we all realize this, but at the same time, you can't just push it out of your head. It has an effect and it just kind of sucks and it eats at you in sort of little ways for, I think, everybody. But, for someone who is in a very kind of unconventional parental situation, it can have, a rather disproportionately negative impact that folks don't really think about, because why would you when you're just on social media talking about how great your life is and just sort of showing off? And great, that's what it's designed for, but at the same time, it sort of sucks to be on the outside of that and to sort of be a bystander, I guess, in a lot of different ways.
I'm not going to say I'm not guilty of that a little bit, as far as, I try to keep it mostly positive, but then like when I have a day like today and even I put it on social media, you know, so I wasn't trying. It's not like a sympathy thing either. Like, it's just a, like, this is real type thing, yeah. But I tried to spin it in a positive way. Instead of just being like, oh, you know, this blows like I wanted to.
Well, with me kind of.
Yeah, I don't want to do that, but.
Still. I mean, there are, and that's the other side of it too, is that there are folks who just sort of, I don't want to say fish for attention, but there's the, we call it vague booking, where you just sort of post a, today really sucked. Thing, you know, and I get it. Like, people go through stuff and you want to hear some kind of supportive reinforcement or validation for what you're feeling. But something about the medium can make it a little bit annoying and a little bit of a turnoff to certain members of your community.
So it's like you have to ride this fine line between, like, not Pollyanna, but also, like, not Eeyore.
Yeah. You have to be, like, genuine, but not seeming like you're being too vague and soliciting attention.
What is it? How have we put this pressure on ourselves to ride that line? What are we doing? Like, what does it matter? This is what I always come back to whenever I start spiraling like this.
You just want to share your life.
Then you're like, fuck it. What is the point of any of this fucking shit?
So then you have this existential crisis while you're trying to make a Facebook status. Right.
Shit?
It just makes it worse while you're spiraling, as you say, because you're like, okay, am I just genuinely sharing my life, which is what I want to do, or am I, like, soliciting some kind of weird attention that I don't really want and putting out this negative energy, or am I, like, trying to pump it up too much and, you know, see the bright side really I don't. When really I don't. And maybe I should just delete this right now.
Yeah.
Which I can't imagine how many statuses are just started and stopped. You know what I mean? That's got to be a very common experience.
Or it's like, I don't want to have to call my mother-in-law and talk to her about this. Let me just put it on Facebook and she can fucking read it.
And at the same time, I don't want to put this out there and then get a call from...
Which I did from my mother. So.
Yep.
I knew that was coming. But God, I don't know.
It's such a tightrope.
Yeah, it is.
And I guess
self-imposed. We don't have to do any of that. I don't have to do any of that. Why?
No. I mean, to a certain degree, it's expected because you've sort of put the breadcrumbs out there, you know? Yeah. So if you were to stop, that in and of itself sort of encourages, like, hey, are you okay?
Yeah, for sure. Because there are people I know that follow. You know, my son's health condition, you know, that love us and they're not here and they want to be here for us and they want to know what's going on with him and they want to make sure I'm okay. They want to make sure he's okay. So a lot of that energy is genuine because people do love him and they want to check on him. And that's what I want. You know, I want them to be able to reach out to me and me to be able to reach out to them. So that's what I try to convey, you know.
Right, and
I have had people reaching out because of it. So that's good. And good way, not a, like, wanting to get the story way or, you know, wanting to tell me a story about themselves kind of way, which happens so many times.
Oh, my God. Yeah. When it just turns into, cool. Well, I can relate to that so hard because I just went through this, that, and the other, and it has nothing to do with what you were describing.
And then you end up comforting them somehow.
It's just that kind of emotional vampirism thing that certain people do that, man, you only have so much to give.
Yeah.
Kind of look at it as you're like, you're an empathetic person, I think. And I have been told that I am that as well. Sure. I'll own it. And, like, you have a bucket that people start to fill with their stuff, right? and you sort of help them sort through that, and you you lower that the volume of that bucket little by little, and then somebody kind of comes along and goes, "Hey, what's up?" and dumps their entire shit into your bucket, and it just overflows like six times over.
Yeah, and it sucks too because sometimes I want to help with that. You know, I want to be that person, and and then also there's that fear of being that person to someone else. Like, I need to talk to somebody. Vomit all over you.
Yeah, because you're constantly self-monitoring too. You know,
and you're like, I really want to talk to you, but I don't know. Are you having a bad day? Like, are we here? Can we? Is it okay if I, like, unburden my soul right now? I mean, like, is that fine?
Just that feeling out process.
Yeah, I mean, I do that to you all the time. Like, hey.
Oh, it's sort of a mutual thing. Yeah.
Can you handle my bullshit right now?
Right.
Okay.
But I think we get each other enough to know that, like, we can sort of tell, like, if one or the other is having a bad day, that it's just a bad day. It's not really a reflection on, oh God, you know, you're such an asshole kind of thing, which I admittedly I feel towards other people on occasion. Because they are kind of inconsiderate of, hey, here's just all my shit for you to deal with.
Right,
and
right.
I don't really care what the context of your situation right now is. Right. Or I'm oblivious to that.
Oblivious to
that. Yeah, I think we're a little bit more cognizant of that, which is probably why we're as close as we are.
Probably
so. Yeah, I will just say that I think some of the recent trials that you've been through, you've described yourself as a rather unconventional parent, you know, whatever that means. And I just think I don't know how else to put it other than that your unconventional parenting has been completely 100% totally justified by the past like week that you've had, you know, it's just been very vindicated. And I say that as a non-parent, of course, but I'm just kind of like, goddamn, you know, of course you're going to have a different approach to this than other people in sort of conventional, you know, parenting circumstances.
Yeah. And just hearing you say that, like, I feel better. Cause you're not a parent, but you're still like a, like you said, an empathic and wonderful human being who cares about me. So that's enough to like, you know,
I do. I don't get what it is to be a parent, but I get that, you know, this is someone I care about who has been going through a hard time and whose child, who I don't really know and frankly don't think it's appropriate to know. I mean, come on, has been having a very hard time and that really, really sucks. And to think that anyone would be judgmental about, you know, the way that you parent, especially when it comes down to the really brass tacks. I'm like, yeah, I kind of think you know what you're doing, you know? I kind of get it, even though I try. I can't relate.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel on the ball and sometimes I'm like, nope. You have your like, why did I even have kids days? You know, just like, I chose this. I put this on myself. And you're like, why? But then, you know, sometimes they make you realize what, you know, that they're worth it. and even through today, like he was so good and, you know, put up with a lot with today and still, you know, he's going to be fine. I know this. He's going to be fine. It's all going to be fine.
But it's a lot.
I'll handle it, right? I've done it before.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, put my hair up and square up and just like I always have.
Hair up and square up. And put on big girl panties.
Yep. And just do the damn thing because that's what I do. But I can.
What else? It's like, what else can you do? Yeah. But at the same time, I know today was a lot and sucked. And I'm just sort of like, yeah, it sort of makes clear, you know, just the broader reality and just the background to why you sort of have the attitude that you do. And I just, you know, it's very much, I think, a day-to-day kind of situation. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, very much.
But you can only do the best you can, and I think that's exactly what you're doing. So what else is there to say? But just my hats off to you. I mean, it's a very lame. Yeah, drink some whiskey, which you and I are very good at.
Yeah, so. We are.
Yeah, I just, God, I'm so sorry that this is, in a way, I don't know. It's sort of like you look at, you know, we do a podcast and we want to have content, of course, but do you really want to mine your life, especially your private life, that much for content for public consumption, you know?
Yeah.
And that also is a delicate balance. I mean, talk about social media. We talk about podcasting as well, and who knows who's listening to this.
But,
and
yeah,
any episode can go viral, right?
Yeah, you're right. I see what you mean, but I know that a lot of the podcasts that I have personally loved and like had, you know, like a true experience in listening to is when people really do try to dig deep and be real and like say something that matters to them. As much as I love like pretending like it doesn't matter, and I love to joke, and like that's how I just handle things with stupid jokes that make me feel better. But when I can relate to somebody on that level, you know, even just listening to a podcast, it's important to me. And like, case in point, I was listening to Grill and JR when JR was talking about the death of Owen Hart. I didn't have a like connection to Owen, or I kind of do to JR now just because I love him. But, you know, and just listening to his story and like how deeply he felt about everything that happened, it evoked an emotion in me just listening to his story. So I don't know if somebody can listen to me babble and like maybe relate to it, or at least make them feel better. I don't know if that is possible, but maybe. You never know what somebody's going through, but that's the way I see it. Like maybe if I say something that makes somebody laugh or makes somebody think or feel better about something that they're going through, then it's all worth it to me.
Yeah. No, I get it. I mean, one of my favorite podcasts is it's unfortunately not part of the Place to Be Nation family of podcasts, but it's called Risk. Look it up. Risk with an exclamation mark. It's just real, ordinary, everyday people telling stories about weird, kind of fucked up shit that happened in their life. And each episode is typically themed. It'll have like two to three, if it's an especially like engaging, by that I mean long and interesting story, you'll have just one speaker, storyteller per episode. But it just kind of mines real shit. And like you, I'm very invested in that kind of thing. I like to get to know people through their life experiences and through their interests. And I think similar to you, I'm kind of an open book. It's just sort of the only way I really know how to interact and be social and be real with people, because I'm not an especially bubbly social person. Like, I'm not into small talk. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I think that's stupid bullshit. And it just is. Like, I'm like so immediately I just tune out and get disinterested in the bullshit kind of casual we're talking just to be talking kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I look at it as there are, when you're telling stories about your life, there's going to be intersections with other people, real people, who sometimes maybe they don't appreciate the things that you're divulging necessarily. Right. So yeah. I'm like, okay, how do I balance that with like me wanting to just bare my soul and just not having any secrets or any shame really versus maybe real names, real places, real events, couch that a little bit so that this isn't totally identifiable again, because who knows who's listening to this.
Right.
So I don't know. I think that's what we're going to get into a little bit on this episode.
Yeah.
We will see.
I don't know. I don't know if any of this is like comprehensible or relatable or whatever. Mm. I guess it doesn't matter. I mean, at the end of the day, I enjoy having the conversation with you regardless of what it's about. So people like can this. Listen to that or they can turn it off, frankly.
Or they can turn it off, yeah. I mean, yeah. So, hey, any episode can go viral. Any episode can be someone's last.
A fucking death. Just dud episode. Fucking Red Rooster match. That's fine.
I understood that reference.
But I mean, like I said, like I hesitate to ask or to like put my shit on you a lot of times because I know you'll be in the group chat like this day can go fuck itself. And so I'll be like, maybe not today. I just check on you and see if you're all right. Because I know you've had some doo-doo shit days yourself.
So might yeah,
get so, everybody's shit in while we're here.
You're very good at that, I've noticed. Is you often, well, I will say that the mutual group chat that we're in, mm-hmm. Not to tell tales out of skewl, but often catches me at my worst, and at my worst is during the week when I'm at work.
You're literally at work, not
yes, when I'm work literally home. At work, like in the shit, you know, because I don't know, this may come as a shock to some people. You may find it very difficult to relate to this, but I don't like working for a living.
No.
It really can kind of suck a fuck. And there are points throughout the day where something just hits me. It's not a big deal at all, but you know, when your defenses are already kind of worn down, and you get like that one email or that one phone call too many, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It just puts you over the top.
Yep.
And so my kind of outlet for that, and I actually try to be kind of conservative and judicious and when I really get there, because I could do it like nonstop all day long. I was really an asshole about it.
You choose your moments.
I really do try to pick my moments where I'm just like, this day can swallow rabid raccoon semen, you know? And it's just sort of a non sequitur put out in out of life. Yes. And you know, that may get commented on or not.
It
and,
usually is like everybody's like same and also relatable, I agree. You know? Everybody's like life sucks all the time.
We all work for a living and we're probably doing the same thing right now. It's a Monday at 2:00. We're not thrilled.
No.
It I think for you kind of take that as well. If I were to ask Tim about something, maybe I will wait an hour.
Yeah. To do it. I'll let him get home and have a couple drinks, and then I'll text him.
Right. And your timing, I must say, is quite impeccable. It's not often that you catch me at a really bad time.
I think we have some sort of psychic vibe.
We do have some kind of. There's like a rapport, I think, that you get into where. Maybe our cycles are synced up.
That's definitely what it is. It's like, you know, oh, I'm feeling bitchy right now. I bet Tim's feeling bitchy right now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you figure that out over these, over the course of a deep friendship. But I will say this, you know, that I cannot really compare my kind of mundane day to day work stress type stuff to, you know, your family situation.
Oh, well, you know, I still, like I said, I will never invalidate somebody else's own doo-doo shit, you know, thinking that my doo-doo shit is more important doo-doo shit than your doo-doo shit. All of our doo-doo shits are equal. And
this is the most usage of doo-doo shit, I think, in a sentence that anyone has committed to, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate your sentiment as well. But I will just say that there were times, especially in the past, I would say, 4 to 5 years, where I would get like really, really down, you know, depressed, down in the dumps, which I'm used to, story of my life, whatever. Some people are just kind of wired that way. It's very much a nature versus nurture debate. Did my upbringing have something to do with that? Yeah, probably, but it is what it is, not to get on a whole thing, right?
Right.
And I think since starting this podcast and since starting, again, this aforementioned group chat that we're in and just having pretty regular kind of daily interactions with people as sort of, you know, superficial as they can be,
mm-hmm.
Has helped my mental health a great deal.
Mine too.
I can tell you, I don't get as sort of profoundly depressed down in the dumps as I used to. Where it would be like, okay, you're a little bit blue and that lasts for a few days. I think people can relate to that. That's more my experience now versus a few years ago when it's like, this is going on for a month, for 2 months, for a year. Mm-hmm. And, oh, look, it's really kind of a struggle to physically get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are people who have not experienced that, and I sort of envy them because they look at it like, well, what do you mean you can't get out of bed? Is there something like, are you injured? Can you not walk? Are you somehow not ambulatory? Just get out of bed.
Right.
And all you're thinking in your head is just get out of bed, and you like can't really do it.
You're just like not capable of it.
And I don't really know how to explain that when there's not like a physical cause. It's right. Just a,
like a will to live issue.
I am exhausted. Yeah. You know, I am just, as soon as I woke up this morning, I am exhausted. Mm-hmm. And no amount of sleep is making that better. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not even that, ooh, woe's me, everything sucks, I hate it. Like, yeah, there's a degree to that, certainly, but it goes a lot deeper. There's a profound, I don't know what this is, but I am drained. I have no energy. I want to be productive. I want to get up, but it's just taking everything I have. And that really, really sucks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But those days are, I can honestly say, few and far between for me now. And it's not because, oh, I'm in therapy and I found the right, that sounded really petty. And I did not mean it to me. I do not mean to invalidate, you know, the whatever, the mental health communities. I have been in and out of therapy for much of my life. I can tell you traditional talk therapy has never done me a lot of good. That is not to speak for the majority of people or to say, you know, don't try it. It's a very individual kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Been in and out of therapy, been on basically every class of antidepressant that there is. Mm-hmm. I have a medicine cabinet that's sort of like the Museum of Mental Health History, that, you know, nothing ever worked, or if it did anything, it just caused different problems. Just that's been my personal experience, mm-hmm. right? And at the end of the day, as corny as it sounds, just connecting with people on a daily basis on just even the most casual, just dumbest shit. I mean, the dumbest shit that you can imagine. Consistently, people who you can relate to, who feel like they are your people, you know, that you are not alone in this world, has done me wonders. So, I don't know. Is all that to say, like, are we trying to give advice? No, not really. But if you're going through some kind of thing and nothing seems to be working, I would just, and I know that I've stressed this before on the show, just find your people. Yeah. You may think that they're not out there, but I promise you that they are. If you have a voice in your head saying, I'm alone in this world, that's a lie. Just try to push it out. I know that's easier said than done, but that is the reality, you know?
And a lot of times, like, I think that when you find your people, sometimes it's not always going to be easy when mm-hmm. you find your people, because you're still going to have issues, mm-hmm. Within the group, you know, and
there's always going to be interpersonal dynamics. Yes.
Right. So you still have to, I think, maybe find a way to, like, disagree, but still love someone. And
yes.
Because that's so difficult now. It's like everybody thinks they don't agree with my one opinion, so they must not like me. And it's usually not the case.
Right. I think a lot of people would disagree that Thanos is the worst villain in the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yes, a lot of people would disagree with that.
That I hold, yeah, that's not a popular opinion. However, there is the difference between opinions and values.
Exactly.
And I think you can find people with the same values who will respect your perhaps hot takes that we all have from time to time.
Your differing opinions.
Yep, and I think it's also important to take a step back and say, you know, my interests are not my personality necessarily. Exactly. Like, I have found a group that I kind of belong to. Again, that feels like these are my people, and it's okay to have dissenting views.
Right.
And it's okay to have personality conflicts from time to time. That's anyone, right? You know,
regardless, that doesn't cease to make them your people.
Of course, right. Yep. And you just it can take a little while, but mm-hmm. but you just sort of work through that stuff because you begin to value these relationships. And yeah, it's such a kind of simple, basic concept that is something I didn't really know I needed until I had it.
Right. Yep.
I don't know how else to put that.
And you, like, it's different because, like you said, it's all online, right? We talked about this a little bit with Steve and Kelly mm-hmm. last time, but
we did, yeah.
If you're not in person with somebody, you have to be more direct, right? So, like,
yes.
Even though there's those uncomfortable things that you might want to bring up, or things that you don't necessarily want to start, like, but if you feel like something's weird or something's wrong, or mm-hmm. you have to say it, right? Because you're eventually going to have to type it out, because you can't just, like, not talk to them at a party or, you know, ignore them in some other way.
Yeah, you don't have kind of the benefit of tone just tone of voice and
body language,
paralanguage, the ways that we communicate that are, we don't realize or think about it consciously at the time, but make up kind of the majority of the way that we communicate with people who are physically in our presence, in our lives. You just sort of cut through all that and get down to very matter of fact ways of communicating, which you sort of have to feel your way around, because you're like, am I being too direct? How is this coming across?
Exactly.
Like, I'm not trying to be some kind of way, but I'm a little bit afraid they might read it that way.
Yes.
And it's an education. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, I'm the type of person, I don't love face-to-face interaction, as you know.
No, are you serious?
I have some other issues that, you know, I need to work on. But I do think I've had throughout my life kind of an easy time of making friends. And my problem has been, I don't sort of value friendships and relationships as much as I should.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I've learned to correct course on, you know. As I said, it's an education. I sort of, for much of my life, did not realize I needed people as much as I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting that much more now. You know, I went for a long time just sort of kind of wiping my ass with a lot of friendships. And that's not something that I'm proud of, you know. And I'm sort of more willing to do the work now that's necessary, because I see and tangibly experience the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very mutual exchange. So anyway, that's my very gee golly hokum take on all of this.
I guess it comes down to, like, if your day is doo-doo shit,
For days.
Find some people you can complain to, and then they'll make you feel better.
They'll make you feel better, yeah. And if they don't make you feel better necessarily in the moment, it will at least lighten the load and remind you that this too shall pass.
Mm, life sucks, and then you die.
And then you die! Yes.
Wow. Well, I feel better. How about you?
Good. Yeah. I feel better too. We are, you know, all about unburdening, encouraging our guests to unburden themselves. We are now unburdening one another's souls, I think.
Ooh, hot.
It is kind of hot. Isn't
it? So at least we, you know, put up what we talk. We, you know, we don't just get people to say things that they necessarily don't want to say, but we also will offer up these things.
We aren't totally. We joke about how sort of exploitative we can we can be with our guests. It's sort of Svengali-ing people, to coin a phrase, into admitting things that they maybe did not expect or plan to. But
or maybe they were dying to, you know?
But maybe they were secretly dying to, yes. They were edging so hard.
Edging so hard.
To get it out. And we finally gave them the forum and the permission to do so.
To blow their load.
Yeah.
Sure.
Just like that. And we are blowing our loads right here all over your speakers. Because we do not discriminate, and we come at each other hard.
Yeah, we do.
Hope you can admit.
Oh, Lord. I'm just now remembering what I said last episode, so I think I'd plucked that from my memory. Anyway, let's take a break real quick before we say other things we might regret. And
Other things other people might regret us saying.
Yeah. And if you hated all this like touchy-feely shit that we just did, just forget about all that and then just listen to the next part, because that'll be more fun.
Yep.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Pup, returning for this episode of Talking Pup with myself, Tim Capel, and Jenny. And Jenny, I have to say to you, the sky was gold, it was rose, and I was taking sips up into my nose, and I wish that I could get back there, someplace back there, into the summer of the early 2000s and the 2010s. Foreshadowing there, folks, because on Talkin' Pop, if you are a listener of this great program, you are always rich, beautiful, and everyone wants to fuck you. And before we get into that, just to tease you with those details, we have to tell you about what's been going on in the land of Place to Be Nation. First of all, on the Place to Be Nation Pop feed, where you are hearing this podcast, many others you can hear. After a 2-year hiatus, DaddyCast, aka you are welcome, DadCast, that is JT Rosero and Don talking a variety of annoyances and parenting, as we kind of touched on in our first half. But you know, from these guys on DaddyCast, it's things like potty training, it's lying, it's shitty Nickelodeon kid shows, and a whole lot more. Check that out. I was very surprised and actually kind of elated to see DaddyCast hit my podcast feed after this long break that they had. So getting back to it, and I hope it's going to be more of a regular thing.
Me too. It was good to hear. They're crazy ass stories, which one of them gave me anxiety real bad. So I was like,
did it really?
Thank God this story has a good ending. Shit.
Well, check that out to see if we can connect the dots here. We also have Russell Sellers and Sam delivering their season one finale of the 90s to Nothing podcast. Oh boy, it's a big one. Looking at Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace, their reactions, their impressions, putting themselves back in their shoes in the summer of 1999. Check that episode out.
I'm sure that went well.
I'm sure it went well for all around. Mm-hmm. We also have, of course, The Year in Pop with Andy Atherton. And on this edition, he and Scott Criscolo were joined by our past guest, the most interesting man in the world, John Arsenio D'Amato, G.A.D., Jad, and Dr. G, discussing the year that was 1975, all the news, music, and movies. I was not alive that year. I don't think you were either.
I was not.
So it will be an interesting history lesson, no doubt.
Hashtag old cast.
Hashtag old cast. Speaking of Andy Atherton, his podcast, Pop Goes to the Movies, had a review of the live action Aladdin. A lot of divisive responses to this film. And, you know, this is part of our Place to Be Nation summer films wager that we are a part of. So we'll be keeping an eye on the box office performance of this movie, but you'll get a review of that on Pop Goes to the Movies with Andy. And who was he joined by on this? Was
I think it was Solo. It was a whole new world outing for him.
Whole new world. Well done. Solo outing for Andy on this edition. Of course, near and dear to my heart, we had the Hard Traveling Fanboys. This being Greg Phillips, Nick Duke, they were celebrating Avengers Month and concluded Avengers Month, the month of May, with a special edition of the Longbook Hunters. They reviewed Volume 1 of the New Avengers Breakout. So talk about divisive content here. I, myself, can tell you, not a big fan of that New Avengers run, but Greg and Nick were not big fans of that old school traditional Kurt Busiek superheroes, you know, cape and tights Avengers stuff. So again, as we said before, you can have different interests without having different values. And I think that, Greg and Nick can still be counted as friends despite their opinions on Avengers, New Avengers Volume 1, Breakout. It's okay. Now, we also have the NBA Team podcast with a double shot of episodes, including Gone Fishing Part 1 and an NBA Finals preview pod blast. Jenny, I don't understand this. The NBA Finals have been a thing for, I guess, as long as the NBA has been a thing, right?
I guess.
How is it possible that the finals have lasted for 11 years when this is something that they do every year? How the fuck are we still talking about the NBA finals? What is going on? Have I been unconscious, catatonic, so indifferent to sports my entire life that this has just always been the case? Because it feels like this shit has been lasting forever. And that is no disrespect to our
fans. I understand. Yeah.
I don't understand. The finals, come on. This should be like a week, maybe 2 weeks. This shit has lasted 11 years. Anyway. Speaking of the NBA.
I agree.
Speaking of the NBA, this week in sports, it was the Cowboy, Roger Morissette, and again, the aforementioned Jad, J. Arsenio D'Amato, running down the NBA Finals, down the series between the Warriors and the Raptors. I gather those are two NBA teams.
Yes, they are.
Are they?
Very well done, yes.
Who do they? What cities do they represent? The
I don't know.
The Warriors, the Baltimore Warriors, and the San Francisco Raptors. I think.
What was the name of the Buckhouse Bunks hometown in Tennessee?
Oh, the Bucksnort Raptors.
Bucksnort Raptors. That's definitely what that is.
And the
Huntsville Warriors.
The Huntsville, Alabama Warriors. Yeah. Yep. Very good finals in that series there. Be sure to keep an eye out on our social media feeds as well, because the reboot of the greatest song of the decade of the 80s tournament is going to be starting soon. That's right. We did not finish it the first time around because of Russian interference. No collusion, of course. They meddled in our affairs, those sons of bitches, and we had to shut the whole thing down because it was completely unfair, the results of the voting. We're going to reboot that, re-energize it, do it right on social media, and that is your chance to get in on the ground floor of the greatest song of the 80s tournament. Be on the lookout. That's going to be starting soon. I am so very excited because it's like a do-over for me. I didn't think I did well. I didn't think I participated as much as I should have the first time around. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, God, you don't often get a second chance to do things right. And that's exactly how I feel about this. So
yes, we should definitely pour all of our thoughts and energy and focus onto this and ignore everything else that ever happens.
Agreed. And well said.
Thanks. Okay. Let me see if I can say this well. On the PTBN Wrestling Bean, on the Place to Be podcast, Justin, Scott, and their guest, Jake Williams, dive into the May of 1989 Meadowlands House Show in episode 521. And then they come right back with a double dose of Saturday night's main events from May and July of 89 with guest Peter Winston. And actually, just to update this a little bit, they just had their look at SummerSlam 89 with John D'Amato.
Ah, man, and making the rounds. This is good. Good content here.
Apparently, that J&D. SummerSlam 89 was quite a show.
It was a barn burner, as we well know.
We well know because we watched all those SummerSlams and we remember them all.
Yes, in great detail. But regardless of how fondly or not you remember that show, you want to get in on this breakdown by the crew and JAD here.
Yep. And then the sixth episode of Row 1, Seat 1, Ben Zanny welcomes Daniel McCabe? Yeah, sure. To talk music and his independent wrestling.
Macabre. Daniel, what a name. You know, I don't think that's how it's pronounced.
I don't either.
I like it.
Scott, Brother Nate Milton, and Scott and Steve Willie recap the Double or Nothing and the classic TNA on the latest edition of Main Event. So check that one out too. On PlaceToBeNation.com, Steve Riddle did a countdown of the top 25 matches in TakeOver history. That was in honor of TakeOver 25 that just went down. And then available on the site is the latest installment of PTBN's excellent WWE Network Adventure with an in-depth look at Mid-South Wrestling from May 26, 1984. And, of course, check out our social media pages and the message board at www.bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our GWWE Greatest Pay-Per-View and TV Match Ever project. And then you can start your list, which we kind of have.
Yeah, and I will say, I will add to that, we've had sort of off to the side a Place to Be Nation live watch, live chats group. It's been a pretty lively weekly group that we've had where chronologically we've been going through the year of 2001 for the WWF. But we've just recently here in the past week taken a break from that, and we are watching some matches randomized from the greatest WWE matches tournament contest that you mentioned. All the nominees there have been randomized. So we basically have a playlist that we've just started working through. I think we watched about four matches so far from the GWWE nominees. And we're going to continue that for a little while as long as there's interest. So if you want to get in on that, contact me, contact Jenny, on Facebook, on Messenger, through whatever means you prefer, and we will add you to that group. Again, this is a weekly get-together, no real commitment, no expectation. We're just going to decide a date, and we're going to watch some matches. And it's been a lot of fun so far. So want to get in on that? Let us know.
But you also have to be able to like put up with some fuck shit junk like during the watches because we're not solely focused on the wrestling per se. I mean, a lot of
I was going to say, do consider the source. You want to have – look, we love these matches as much as the next person, but you want to have a little bit of ironic distance because we try to make it fun. I mean, how much can you say about, well, that's a really great segment there working over the left arm, right?
Right, right.
I mean, this is supposed to be a lively chat watch as it happens. And, you know, you want to pull your own weight and you want to make that fun and amusing. And that's how we spent some of our nights here for the past, gosh, however many weeks.
It's been a while, yeah.
It's been a while, but it's been going strong and I've had a good time with it. You've had a good time with it.
For sure.
Seeing some matches I think you've never seen before, which has been part of my joy in this. Yes. Like, oh, has Jenny seen this match? Oh, my God. This is, you know.
Or like, oh, Stephanie's in this match. Jenny will
be. Stephanie's here, yeah.
Daddy Vince is here. Let's watch this.
This is right up her alley.
Wake up, Jenny.
Then anyway, the point being, watching these matches with friends, with a group, is a lot more fun than doing it on your own because you've seen them already. Mm-hmm. You know this stuff. This is just to refresh your memory and have some fun with friends. So anyway, hit us up if you're interested in that jam. Okay, back to live action here. Gosh. God, what else, Jenny?
God, what else?
It's sort of like show up for the deep and uncomfortable insights. Mm-hmm. Stay around for the fuck shit junk.
Exactly. That's perfect. Of course, I'm sure that everyone is back.
I'm sure we plan that, you know, exactly the way that people prefer to listen to these podcasts.
Right.
And we want to talk about, I mean, this is a summertime edition of Place to Be Nation's Talking Pop here with you and I. And we want to share some, again, it can't be a summertime survival guide because, frankly, who needs that? Right. I mean, it doesn't come with as many.
Stay-at-home moms need that, but that's a whole different thing.
That may be a different, altogether different and very valid podcast, but it doesn't come with the same kind of expectations that a holiday survival guide does necessarily. So I don't know. I just thought we might reminisce, talk about some of our favorite memories and make people feel nostalgic and maybe a little bit wispy.
Oh, I love making people wispy. Yeah. But okay. Wistful. I will start it off by referencing something that's going to happen this weekend, which my family is going on a road trip.
Oh, boy.
So we'll be going to Atlanta and then going up to Charlotte, North Carolina, and then coming back through Atlanta to stop at a Braves game and then coming home. So this is like 5 days, which is, I think, is – you know, like a lot of people when they go to Disney, they'll do like 5, 6, 7 days or whatever. I think 5 days is a pretty good like limit for
sure.
How number one, how much I want to be in the car. And, you know, like
number two, how much you want to be around your family.
Right. That and like how much money you want to spend. So, yeah. But
there's a lot of factors here is what I'm hearing.
Right. But see, like, when I was growing up, like I've said before, I grew up pretty poor and my mom worked a lot and there wasn't always like, you know, a lot of families would have a set summer deal. Like we always go to the beach for a week during the summer or my family goes to Disney or the mountains or whatever. Usually most people, you know, do some sort of family summer vacation. We didn't always get to do that. There are things like that that I want to be able to give my son on a pretty consistent basis because I always did feel kind of left out and I'm like, why can't I do that? We don't do nothing fun. I mean, it was just all her fault, obviously, that we were bored all summer. Like, we're poor. Like, why can't we do anything?
Shitty child
boy. God, that's how we were. So, but when I remember this one, trip.
All to say that that is very relatable. I know exactly what you're describing. So please continue.
So I was not a super pleasant teenager, to my mother, but I had a little bit more empathy than my brother did. Right. So when he went through his teenage years, he was quite an asshole. And so, like, as we got a little bit older, we did manage to take this trip. And we went to Dillard, Georgia, which some people may know, may have heard of, may have been to. And
heard of it, never been to.
And really, it's like, I get my mom. Like, I get she was like, look, I don't get that much time off. I want to go where I want to go and do things. And these kids are just going to have to live with this crap. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we particularly wanted to go to like Dillard, Georgia, where it's like antique shops and like horseback riding, which we don't know anything about either. There was a tennis court. I do remember the tennis court, but you know, Jenny's not much of a tennis player.
Sure.
And so I was trying not to be a complete asshole on this trip this whole time because, you know, I felt bad for my mom and all that stuff. Anyway, but my brother did not. He didn't give two shits. Like, he was a dick. Like, the whole time. Just nasty and rude and, like, didn't want to do anything. Didn't want to hear about anything. Just wanted to, like, play his game or whatever he had. I don't know what the fuck he had. And just be an asshole to everybody. And so from Dillard, we went up to not Chattanooga, but the other one that everybody always goes to, Gatlinburg. So we went up to Gatlinburg, and we would just leave his ass in the hotel room. Like, we'd just be like, fine. Yeah. You know, if you want to be a dickhead, because there's more things for, like, my age group to do in Gatlinburg. Mm-hmm. Not that much, but a little bit. So we'd just, like, leave him in the hotel room and just go and do whatever we want.
And, hey, if you were along for the ride, that's at least one half of your children. So your mom is, like, not feeling too bad about it. Right.
Like, because he was, he was old enough to stay by himself, you know, so she wasn't really worried about him being kidnapped or anything. But it was just like, I'm not dealing with your shit today. Like, I want to have fun on this vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, kind of admire her for that because I.
Hell yeah. That's badass.
Because I will let my son ruin my time. Like, all the time. Like, if we go somewhere and he hates it.
You understand. It is.
It's like, we go somewhere and he hates it. And I'm like, throwing my own fit. Like, fine. I don't know why I'd do anything for you anyway. Let's just fucking leave. And adding on and not being any help whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Try to do the most, and then they shit on it.
Yeah,
so.
And I'm afraid of that for that trip. You know, this trip that we're doing this weekend, I'm like, please God, let him like a little bit of this. And not
I can't tell you. Look, and this is not a reflection on anything. It's just I cannot impress upon you listeners enough how many times you've been like, well, we're considering doing this kind of trip, but the last time we did that, it was a disaster.
Yes.
So I'm just like, I don't even know what the backstory is necessarily, but it sounds like a challenge.
It's like I never learned my lesson. It's like I somehow keep trying. Why? I don't know.
Trying it. Try different things and, you know, eventually something will take, right?
God, I hope so. Like, I found this really cool place that we're staying in Georgia, right? It's an Airbnb, and they had their own private arcade. And the whole arcade has, like, tons of games in it, and it's all free. You can play whatever games you want. They have a pool in their backyard. They, you know, it's all Airbnb. You know, they're all, like, play with their shit and do whatever you want. So that'll be really fun, I think.
I'm 35 years old. Between the ages of, like, 7 and 35. If you told me that's what I was doing, I'd be set. So
it's pretty cool.
If you misfire with that, I don't know what to, you know.
Yeah, I got nothing after that.
Exactly.
And I will say that going to the Braves game is more for his dad. And
oh God, yeah, you guys can take a nap and
yeah, so
you know, eat hot dogs or walk around or
yeah,
find something to do. God bless you.
Yeah, it won't be for the actual game, but I think it's just like getting him to see that it's okay to like be in a loud crowd because loud noises bother him, whatever. So
yeah,
it's like immersion therapy at some point.
And to be like, hey, look, you know, actually, everyone is bored.
Right.
So yeah, it's not just you. Don't feel bad. This is a terrible thing. Like, this is awful. Everyone hates it. So, you know, just
so let's sort spend $200 to go and do it.
Spend $200 to do something that you really don't want to do.
Right.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, just know that you're not alone in this.
And just please don't complain about it the whole time because I don't want to be there either. Okay.
Yeah. You don't complain. You just sort of take in the experience of this communal misery.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no one else is complaining, but they're just as miserable as you are. So
it's just there they you can go. Drink. So. You know?
Yeah. And that's the rub right there is that, I mean, when you're a kid, you've got pretty limited options. So, yeah. Best of luck to you there.
I appreciate that. What about
we're you? Setting a low, we're setting a
we
low
are.
Bar
here yeah.
for baseball games, clearly.
Did you have any, like, nightmarish vacations? I'm sure you did.
Okay. I never had really a kind of traditional vacation thing that we did every year growing up. We had amusement parks that were options here in Central Virginia. We had Busch Gardens, Williamsburg,
mm-hmm.
One of the great Anheuser-Busch companies. I think it was voted like one of the cleanest amusement parks in America.
Wow.
At this point in the recent past. And it's pretty cool. I mean, you've got your typical amusement park roller coaster type stuff, popular attraction, themed around different countries and cultures, kind of a Epcot without the like proper branding. You know what I mean?
Right, yes.
So. You have that. Another great Anheuser-Busch company was Water Country USA. Yes, that's really what it's called. It's a water park.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a pretty popular destination when, you know, it's hot enough that you want to do, you know, outdoor activities in the pool and dealing with water slides and lazy rivers and wave pools and whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, any water park is they're kind of all the same in my experience.
The lazy river being the clear winner of all of those things.
The clear winner, one that you don't appreciate as much as you should
exactly.
when you're a child, but as an adult,
it's perfect.
That's where it's at. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, 5 hours can pass and you're like, "Oh, what time is it?" You know. When you're an adult.
Where am I? What's happening?
Yeah, where? What's? Yeah, what day is it? we also had another amusement park here again. It's called King's Dominion. Now, there's a brief period in the mid-90s to the early 2000s. It was known as Paramount's King's Dominion. That's right. Paramount purchased the Paramount Company, purchased this amusement park property, I guess, and had various like Paramount Viacom themed attractions. I don't know what to call it. Like there was a
like Universal?
Yeah, kind of like Universal, but for Paramount / Viacom
gotcha.
Stuff. Because they like had their merger or whatever.
Right.
So there was like a big Nickelodeon themed mm-hmm. attraction. There was like a Days of Thunder. There was a Wayne's World, an entire sector of this park devoted to Wayne's World. I remember a great old wooden roller coaster called the Hurler.
Oh my gosh.
The Wayne's World section of this park.
How have I never heard of this place?
Because it was such a, like, a brief period of time. It was just like kind of a blip. And so very local, you know what I mean? This wasn't like a national thing, like Six Flags. Everybody's heard of Six Flags, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there are many other King's Dominions to my knowledge. I mean, before this whole Paramount deal, they had, Hanna-Barbera Land for, which was like a, just for the kid, they had like kiddie roller coasters. Mm-hmm. And they had the Scooby-Doo roller coaster, which was like the first roller coaster anyone who lived here, again, in Central Virginia ever rode.
Huh.
They had a roller coaster called the Rebel Yell, which a little bit more advanced, another wooden coaster, but it didn't have any spirals or didn't go upside down or anything.
Right,
but
right. Just
it would kind of freak you out, you know, when you're an older kid or early teenager. They did a backwards gimmick for the Rebel Yell at one point. Yeah, this is how desperate they became, I suppose.
So this is what you did in the summer? You attended.
This is what you would do in the summer. These amusement parks in my early adolescence, but. This is all to kind of set the stage for what I really wanted to tell you about, which was a campground my family used to frequent. I don't even know how to, like, transition into this.
I felt like family was in air quotes when you were saying that.
It's my actual family,
right.
My dad's side of the family, who I have not described before on here on Talking Pop. I've talked about my mom's side.
Mm-hmm.
So appropriately enough, that was on the Surviving the Holidays, Christmas holiday-themed edition of Talking Pop, shenanigans with my mom's side of the family. Here you'll get to hear about my dad's side, divorced as they were. So it was kind of a pretty big divide growing up. Let me tell you about the northern neck of Virginia. Not to do a whole geography lesson here, but the northern neck, it's basically the part of the western shore of the Chesapeake Bay, borders the Rappahannock and the Potomac Rivers, but misleadingly enough, to me, in Central Virginia, it's more kind of northeast to where I'm located, okay? But for our purposes, we're going to be concerned with the Rappahannock region of the Northern Neck, because this is where there is a campground, a somewhat unique, we'll call it, campground known as Gray's Point.
Okay.
And Gray's Point, it's sort of a minor redneck Riviera in these here parts. I almost called it a poor man's redneck Riviera, but that's almost a special kind of damning thing to say if I had said that.
Also redundant when you say redneck.
Redundant and also going like two levels too deep, you know, to describe this. But in any event, like, you know, the Northern Neck, it has towns with names like Gloucester and Middlesex and Kilmarnock and Urbana. I will say, I went on the Wikipedia page for Kilmarnock County earlier today, and the picture that's featured on Wikipedia, in the background there is a liquor store that I've frequented many times. It's like one of the three things I know about Kilmarnock. So a little piece of trivia for you there. But Gray's Point itself, it's located in Topping, Virginia. That's what the township, the county, whatever it is, it's called. I've spent a bit of time in Bottoming, Virginia on occasion.
I bet you have.
You know, that's more of a sometimes food. for me. Anyway.
Power bottoming.
not for me to say. Again, we like to disclose all here on Talking Pop. Grays Point, though, on the Rappahannock River in Topping, Virginia, in the Northern Neck. It is a, I mean, it's a trailer park, essentially. Okay. You have what are known as seasonal campers. These are people who own trailers and they pay an annual fee for the privilege of frequenting Grays Point throughout the season. Now, the season when Grays Point is open is, and I may be wrong about this, it's been a few years, but as I recall, the first weekend of April through the first weekend of November. If you were wondering why that's significant, the first weekend of November is the Urbana Oyster Festival.
Ooh.
Urbana is a bordering town, again, in the Northern Neck. They have an oyster festival. It's an annual tradition. I think they just celebrated their 60th anniversary of doing this. Yeah. A lot of activities, big local attraction. Do you like oysters, Jenny?
No, I do not. Do you?
Okay. I don't really either. Nevertheless, I have attended the Urbana Oyster Festival no less than 5 times, I think. So there's a lot to do. Okay. I mean, there's not a lot to do. I stand corrected. There's more to it than oysters. Let me put it that way. There's, there's food vendors and a lot of alcohol, a lot of live music. There's arts and crafts. There's culture. A lot of it is white trash culture, right. But it is what it is. You know how these things go.
I mean, from a town that has a peanut festival, so
there you go.
Gotcha.
You know, I knew that you would be able to extrapolate this to something.
Mm-hmm.
But that's November, and we're talking about summer. And the reason I bring this up is I had probably some of, weirdly enough, the best times and the best experiences of my life at this shitty white trash campground with my and that is because okay, how do I segue into this here? My aunt, which is my dad's sister, and her husband, my uncle, were longtime seasonal campers at Grays Point. That is to say, they owned a trailer. They're all stationary trailers here at Grays Point. They also have overnighters, which is when you come in with an RV or motorhome or whatever, and they make accommodations and you pay a nominal fee, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the seasonal campers would kind of frown on the overnighters. That's just sort of the dynamics of the local culture here.
Mm-hmm.
But be that as it may, this is my aunt who I have changed names to protect the not so innocent, so to speak. So we're going to say my aunt Wanda. Okay.
Wanda. Okay.
Wanda.
Wait. Okay. Pause. Is it weird for you to say aunt, or do you say aunt?
Okay, I'm glad that you asked this question, because this speaks to the divide within my family.
Okay.
It sort of depends on the person's first name. If it sounds better to say aunt so-and-so, then I will say aunt so-and-so. If it sounds better just rolling off the tongue to the air to say aunt so-and-so, I will say aunt so-and-so.
That is so weird.
And I think that's just because my dad's family is really, really country, from the South. They pretty much say aunt exclusively, right?
I mean, I do.
Yeah. And my mom's family is from a little bit further north. She grew up in, I think I've told this story before, like in Rochester, upstate New York, and Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And then later moved here, still as a child, but, you know, wasn't born here in Virginia, which in and of itself, Central Virginia is very conflicted as far as the Mason-Dixon line, right? Mm-hmm. Capital of the Confederacy, but at the same time, the north of the northernmost extreme of the state is very different from mm-hmm. like the southernmost extreme. Like we could be different countries. So my mom is more of that kind of, I mean, she'd be called a Yankee basically.
Yeah.
Who are whatever. And I would hear more like aunts. I think she would say aunts as well. It was just a whatever sounded better. So I never got like a consistent feel for what that would entail.
What about when you said like Aunt Becky from Full House?
I think Aunt Becky is always going to be Aunt Becky.
Aunt Becky, right. I would never imagine anybody saying Aunt Becky.
I can't either. It's just weird. That does sound very, very weird to my ears. So
I feel like you would have to have a real fancy name to like make aunt sound good with it. Like even when I say aunt, I think it sounds weird. Like just not a non-word.
Like does it sound too bougie tea?
Yeah, a little bit bougie. So like it'd be have to be like Aunt Victoria or something.
Aunt Victoria.
Aunt Elizabeth.
What about, something like Auntie? Do you ever say that? That's not really a white people thing.
No, it's really not.
Okay. That's fair enough. So in any case.
Okay. Unpause. Back to your story.
So I'm calling her Aunt Wanda, right? Wanda. Mm-hmm. Her real name, gosh, this is so funny. I can't believe you asked me about this. Her real name would be Aunt So-and-so. Something I never even thought about when I came up with these fake names earlier, right? Because it's kind of unnatural for me to use the fake names anyway, right. So I don't know if that says something or not. Anyway, it's aunt, whichever, Wanda, married to a guy named, we're calling him Bruce.
Okay.
Now, just to give a little bit of background without getting into the whole God only knows, they got married in the late 80s. This was her second husband. He was a little bit older than her. Which is to say she was like in her late 20s when she met him. He was in his probably late 30s, may have even been 40. And he was like this race car driver, really good looking, like kind of a hot shot, kind of hot shit. Mm-hmm. Had been married before, as a matter of fact, and even had children from a previous marriage, went through a really bad divorce, didn't have much of a relationship with these children, and was sort of looking to settle down when he met her. Mm-hmm. Her first marriage ended pretty badly. It was just a situation where they were both too young. They did have a child, my cousin, who I am going to be calling Connor.
Oh, God. You didn't pick any of the names I suggested earlier.
No. I'm trying to be very realistic. We'll put it that way. Okay. I thought about giving them stupid, funny bullshit names, but I didn't think I'd be able to maintain that without just cracking up.
So
we're giving halfway realistic names. So my cousin Connor, who's like, barely a year older than me from her first marriage, they were too young, blah, 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 meets this guy, Bruce, you know, is trying to, you know, she's basically, she wants to have a family. She wants to have some financial stability, not struggle so much. This guy is finally calming down after a lifetime of sort of, you know, throwing it at everybody. Mm-hmm. And so they get married. And I will tell you, Bruce, he was a good-looking guy. He looked kind of like Charles Bronson, circa Death Wish, with a perm. A little bit of Burt Reynolds in there, too. I considered calling him Burt. But, yeah, he was pretty hash-mash. I think he'd kind of be your type if you saw him. I should
Sounds like it.
Send you a pic if I have it. And on their honeymoon, she, my Aunt Wanda, actually got pregnant.
Wow.
Yeah. And now Bruce, he really didn't want to have any more kids after his first go around. His first marriage came apart. You know, he was not on board with this. He spent many years trying to make that work, and it didn't.
Should have pulled out then.
Should have pulled out then. Well, as the story, here's the story. Their honeymoon, they went to the Bahamas or Jamaica. I can't remember. One or the other. The story she told was she got her purse stolen, which had her birth control pills. And so they had no protection, said, fuck it, did it. And this was like on the first day of their honeymoon, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think is actually true. I think she did have her shit stolen. But I don't know about the rest of it. Like, all I know is she came back and, you know, a month or so later, she tells everybody she's pregnant. It's like, all right. And anyway, this is the early 90s. Long story short, coming out of this whole situation, my cousin, who I'm going to call Matt, is born, my younger cousin.
Gotcha.
And this is just kind of their life for a while, Wanda and Bruce. They, I will tell you, had a fairly tumultuous marriage. He had a pretty good job, actually, working at the local cigarette factory.
I thought he was a hotshot race car driver.
He was a hotshot race car driver, just as a recreational activity. That was not, yeah. I don't think he earned a living doing that. It was just sort of something he did on the side Friday nights at Southside Speedway, gotcha. Which is about 4 miles from my house where I'm living right now. So, you know, anyway, shortly thereafter, he got a pretty good job at the cigarette factory, which, again, I don't know why I'm being cagey about. Anyone who knows anything about the Commonwealth of Virginia or perhaps North Carolina knows that the big cigarette manufacturer is Philip Morris. Mm-hmm. So that's where he worked. Won't be secretive about that. But he was pretty traditional and had very old school values. You know, my Aunt Wanda, she was a homemaker. Like, she did hair out of her home, made money on the side, but, you know, it was kind of like, she was like a housewife basically, which is what she wanted and what he wanted, but it still like wasn't good enough for him the way that she, you know, ran the household.
Oh, wow. Imagine that.
So they had a lot of fights growing up. And when I say fights, I mean like shouting matches. They would both really go at each other. And there were a few occasions that I was witness to because I spent a lot of time in their house growing up, like before and after school. My Aunt Wanda would keep me, mm-hmm. you know, kind of grew up with my cousin Connor, you know, how that whole thing goes. Mm-hmm. I would have dinner with them a few nights a week, you know, if my mom was working late, whatever. I saw some dishes get thrown, some plates get thrown. I mean, this was kind of the caliber of the fights that they would have.
Right.
But for the most part, my whole life, I grew up thinking that or just having the understanding that this was just the dynamic that they had, that they were pretty committed to each other, but they would just have these, you know,
they just fought.
They just fought.
Some people just fight.
Exactly. And that's just what I was used to with them. Right. Anyway, fast forward. There is a point to all of this. Gray's Point Campground. They became seasonal campers in the mid 90s. I started regularly kind of going down there with them. I would say in the early 2000s. And when I talk about this place as a redneck Riviera, it's like, again, Trailer Park Central. It's right on the river. They've also got a pool sort of, you know, on the campground, centrally located. So if the river wasn't your jam, you can hang out by the pool. Mm-hmm. And they had a camp store, which is basically just a convenience store where they sold the things you would find in a convenience store, including cigarettes, but not condoms, if that tells you anything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, take that for what you will. And it's golf cart central as well. I mean, the way you got around here was if you didn't own a golf cart, you were shit out of luck. They had limited golf carts you could rent, but for the most part, if you wanted to be a part of the action here at Gray's Point, you needed to own your own golf cart. Gas or electric, didn't really matter. So my relatives here, my aunt and uncle, I think they owned like two golf carts, and that's how we got around. Okay. We had some times on these golf carts, let me tell you. It was sort of a unique situation because when I really started going down there regularly, I was in my, I guess, mid-20s. I had just finished grad school, so I'm like 24 going on 25 years old.
Oh, a grown-ass man.
Yeah, I'm a grown-ass man, full-on. I mean, I'd gone a few times when I was younger than that, but not by much, you know. For the most part, I was at least an adult spending time here at this campground. The problem with that was my younger cousin, the aforementioned Matt, who had spent much of his life going down there, had made a lot of friends at this campground. You know, he was okay. He was fun to hang out with when, despite our difference between ages, there's about a, 5-year gap between us. So he's like 20, I'm 24, 25. Not that big a deal, but at the same time, kind of a big deal.
Right. Just you know just I mean? A like, long enough of a gap to where you're not super into the same things at the same time.
Yeah, today it's like nothing, but right. Back then it was sort of if it was just the two of us, it was no big deal. But he had a lot of friends who were even like younger than him. So there would be times when I would look around our trailer and realize, oh, fuck, I'm at like a high school party. This is way not cool. Let me get the fuck out of here.
You were that guy.
Well, yeah, and I didn't try to be that guy or want to be that guy.
You were accidentally that guy.
Accidentally, incidentally that guy, and I would realize I need to nope the fuck out of here because I'm trying to drink and I'm old enough to drink and I bought and brought liquor. And, you know, my 20-year-old cousin, of course, he's wanting to drink too, which I had no judgment about, didn't care about. But then when it got down to, I don't even know some of these kids, mm-hmm. and they're like, I mean, I think he had a friend like as young as like 15 or 16. And I was like, oh, no.
No.
This is
– you go to jail for that shit. Yeah,
not only is this uncool just – for me to even be present for, but if something happened, like if somebody showed up, like this is my ass because mm-hmm. I am the only like person of legal drinking age in the room right now. So this is fucked. And so like there would be a lot of those uncomfortable situations. Again, not making any judgment on him because we've all been there, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it was like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. And so I would have to kind of float between my cousin, who, you know, was my cousin I grew up with, sort of didn't mind hanging out with, and my aunt and uncle, who were sort of affectionately referred to as the Wrinkle Ranch, because they had their friends who were members of, as we would refer, our old.
Okay, 100% hanging with the old people is probably a lot funner.
It kind of was, to be honest with you.
Because a lot of times they were like, don't give a shit, old. Like,
they did not give a shit, exactly. No. And it would just be like from place to place to place. Go, like you would get bored at one place and go somewhere else. And it's like, oh, so-and-so's got a campfire going. Oh, so-and-so's watching the race and have a projection screen that they put up, you know, outside their trail.
Wow.
Just that kind of, it's Pocono weekend. Which I don't give a shit about any of this, but
it's WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah, but like that's what I'd be on board for, right? But none of these fucks cared about that. But it was just entertaining to just sort of be on the, you know, the outside looking in with this kind of nonsense, because you're like, my God, these are adults. Like these are people in their 50s and 60s or older. And this is just like, this is what they do. You know?
I bet they had some life stories.
They did.
Yeah.
They did have some life stories that I would hear about from time to time. So, I don't know. I would just kind of float between these two worlds here. There were definitely a lot of weekends that I would spend poolside with like a, you know, my Tervis tumbler filled with Bacardi and God only knows
Baja Blast
Mountain Dew. I don't know if you could buy it in stores back then, but some kind of soda, whatever it was. And I would just sit out there, listen to music, and get sunburnt all to hell, getting drunk, and just having a blast. Like it was the kind of thing that when therapists talk about having a mindful moment, the only thing I could relate it back to where I was just like, I feel really carefree and comfortable in my own skin right now. Which is very like, I know Zen of me or whatever to say, but I just reflect back on that and like, I wish that I could get back to that place somewhere back there in that place, as the song goes. Yes,
it does.
I remember there was one time where I'm a very pale person, by the way. I don't know if you noticed. I wear a lot of sunscreen or else I'm getting cancer, right?
Right.
I like was so drunk one day, I just forgot to put sunscreen on. Half of my body kind of thing. So I had the, you know, the spray on sunscreen.
Oh, that stuff's worthless.
That stuff is so worthless. I sprayed like my arms and the back of my neck and thought I did my legs and I like forgot to do my left leg or whatever. So I literally had one white ass pale leg and one burnt red leg. I looked like Greg's favorite Marvel cosmic being, the in-betweener. Where one leg, my thighs were white, and the other was brown fat. You
brown
know?
Fat, yeah. I know which one looked better.
Brown fat looks better than white, as Arn Anderson knows. That may have also been the weekend that I did an Eddie Guerrero-style frog lash, as I often did, to great acclaim, I will say, into the pool, but it was in like 3 feet of water.
Oh no.
And I came down really hard on my knee and ruptured my bursa sac.
Oh my Jesus.
So when you tell people you ruptured your bursa sac, it's a
your what sack boy? What sack did you bust?
Yeah. Apparently it's just a fluid filled sac in your knee that I think it's kinda like spinal discs where
yeah, you need that cushion.
you need that cushioning. You know, it's like a jelly donut.
Yeah.
And the jelly leaks out, and you're in some pain when that happened.
Yeah.
So it was one of those things where I was like, I didn't really tell anybody, but I was like, oh, I'm kind of fucked. I had a lot of injuries at this campground.
It sounds like a very dangerous place.
That happened, and I kind of hobbled around for about 2 weeks until I recovered, which I did recover. It was no big deal. But there was one night I literally twisted both ankles somehow on the same night, just walking, stumbling around in the dark. I was just like, I cannot. Like the first time it happened, I was like, when you twist your ankle, you're like, ooh, that's really bad. I'm going to be paying for that tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I can already tell it's swelling. This really sucks, but you know, I'll be okay. I know it's not broken or anything. And then like 5 minutes later, it happens to the second one. I'm just like, how does this happen?
Good thing y'all had golf carts.
Well, I was about to say, speaking of the golf carts, we had a few golf cart accidents. I, once again, was so drunk, I can only describe it as melting off the back of a golf cart one time. So you've got a golf cart, you've got the driver, you've got the passenger, you've got two seats in the back, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting on the back, and my cousin Matt is who it would have been, took off, and the golf cart moved, and I just stayed stationary. Like, I don't know how it happened.
Like a cartoon?
Like a cartoon. I just slid, and this is why I say I melted off the back of the golf cart and just laid flat on my back on the pavement. And he was like halfway up the road before realizing. And I was just laying there laughing my ass off. May or may not have had a concussion. Who knows? So that was the thing that happened. We also wiped out a few times where we just would turn the golf cart over.
Mm-hmm.
Not all the way, but just, you know, being stupid, doing dumb shit, going through the woods, through mud, through trails, and they aren't really designed for that. Mm-hmm. So next thing you know, you've got a golf cart laying on top of you. It's a wonder we didn't break our necks, because these types of things would happen a lot. One dude who was friends with my cousin actually got distracted, like checking out some girl he was into, and just like flew down this ravine that, I mean, he knew it was approaching. You're supposed to, you know, really brake coming up on this, and he just went flying and went right off the road straight into the river.
Oh my God.
And like, he had like four people who just bailed out. And it was just one of those scenes. Like you said, it was like a cartoon where you're just not expecting this to happen at all. All of a sudden you just see all these kids just fly off of this golf cart, just like fleas leaping, you know, and he ends up in the rocks, in the river, was uninjured, stayed in the golf cart, but you just die laughing after you realize, okay, this is, nobody got hurt, so I'm okay to laugh at this. And I was trying really hard not to laugh until I knew the outcome of the situation.
Did the golf cart sink?
The golf cart was halfway submerged, and I think he pulled it out with a tow cable, and I think the worst of it was he had to replace the battery. It was a gas golf cart, but it, you know, still had a battery, like, mm-hmm. you know, like your car. If it had been an electric golf cart, he would have been fucked.
Mm-hmm.
But he just had to replace the battery, and everything else dried out and was okay. So
wow.
Yeah, that was it. And he was someone, he had the, I can't actually remember his real name, but everyone called him Catfish because he looked like a catfish.
Because he looked like a catfish.
Yeah, this kid looked like a catfish.
What?
I don't know how to describe.
Did he have whiskers? I mean.
No, he didn't have whiskers. He just had kind of a weird, I don't know. He had a catfish like face. Oh. And this is not me making up a name. This is just what we called them. Everybody had, like, everybody kind of had nicknames. And,
catfish. Oh
yeah, we called him catfish. There's a story. I will tell you off air because I think it could be potentially offensive.
Oh, okay.
If I say it now.
We would never want to do that.
No, we would certainly, perish forbid, never want to do that. I know I'm rambling here, but I'm just trying to set the stage as best I can with this godforsaken fuck shit campground.
You're doing a great job. Like, I can see everything that you're saying. So
okay, I'm very glad. This place was also the site of the Flaming 151 incident of 2010. Which I think I've told you about before, somewhat briefly. We got there like a Friday night. Like, I had gone directly after work, so I was already sort of in a mood, you know what I mean? And just wanted to make like mixed drinks, wanted to make frozen drinks. So we got stuff to make daiquiris and pina coladas, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And I was going to kick it up with a little bit of Bacardi 151, right? Just to, because pina coladas can be kind of a wimpy drink, you know?
Yeah, I'm not fond of them.
Yeah, I'm not either. But it was like, you know, it was a summer, you know, it was like not quite summer. It was probably the weekend before Memorial Day. So you're sort of itching for it and you're like, yeah, I want to. You know, I want like a frozen drink, but we can't do but so much since it's not, we're not really on vacation. It's just a weekend, you know? And, somehow or another, I got talked into doing shots of 151.
Oh no.
When whoever it was saw that I had it.
Catfish.
And it wasn't catfish. I want to put that on, my cousin Connor's girlfriend, who I'm going to call Chelsea, she'd probably hate, whatever. You've stalked my Facebook photos from years
back.
Probably seen her.
Probably
She's in a lot of them. And, you know, she definitely was a kind of life of the party type of person. And we were sort of a bad influence on each other. We kind of brought out the worst in each other. I'll put it that way. And it was like, let's do shots. And I'm like, okay, it's like 9 o'clock, you know? Okay, fine. Let's do shots, whatever. And that turns into, oh, you got 151. Let's do Flaming 151 shots, which I had never done before. And I mean, it's literally what it sounds like. You 151 is pretty much lighter fluid. You
pretty much
set it on fire and quickly shoot it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I did a couple of those. And I was encouraged to do more because I was told that it looked really cool. It was like,
that is the best reason to continue drinking.
That looked so awesome. It was on fire and you shot, you know, that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay. And I was feeling pretty good. It was not one of those nights where I was like, oh no, I'm so drunk, I'm getting sick, I'm done for the night. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I felt, don't get me wrong, I was, you know, 10 sheets to the wind, but feeling pretty good. Went to bed. Turns out, got up the next morning, not to be graphic, but let's just say it was a good thing I slept on my stomach.
Ugh.
Yeah. I had to strip that bed and do a lot of laundry the next day.
Oh no.
Yeah, it was gross and it was bad. And I paid for it so hard. And that's one that I've kind of never lived down, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, I probably shouldn't have done that, but I feel like it could have been as bad as it was, could have been a lot worse.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel you. Like, it's
You know, like
not quite worth it, but like at least you didn't die. So
at least I didn't die, and it's like I didn't sort of feel as bad as I probably should have. So it's like I wouldn't even really necessarily take it back because it's worth like the funny story and the and just the recall, such as it is that I have of that night.
I wonder if people still do shots, flaming shots of 151.
I don't know. Maybe I was the last person to do it.
Might have been. They outlawed it shortly after that.
Because I can tell you I've never done it since.
I bet you can't do it in Alabama. You can't do shit in Alabama.
No. Probably wasn't supposed to do it there, but hey, it's in a trailer, whatever. Anything good. You know, this was also the place I had my first breathalyzer test.
Oh, nice.
This was not my fault, I will say. I will go ahead and go on record for that. This was my close to same age as me cousin Connor, we're calling him.
Yes.
I think I've mixed my cousins here. My younger cousin is Matt. My older cousin. My older cousin is Connor. And he grew up going to this campground off and on much of his life, right? He's about the same age as me, you know, started going there with his family in the mid-90s. And he earned himself a bit of a reputation as a troublemaker, let's say. Just dumb kid stuff, partying, being out too late, you know, drinking, whatever. And he had sort of quit going there for a while. And this was like sort of a special occasion where I think he had just gotten engaged and, you know, he and his fiance, now wife, were having some turmoil. And he just kind of wanted a weekend away. So, and I believe this was his birthday weekend. So he was like, I'm going to go down to Grays Point because I know my mom, my brother, my cousin are there and just, you know, hang out, have a fun weekend, right? And so we're hanging up, kind of, we're hanging out, kind of catching up. And we're, I mean, we're not really even doing anything, you know, deviant. I mean, we're adults, again, in our mid-20s, just having a good time. And it did get late. We were out just drinking, and they had a curfew here at this campground. I think it was like 11 o'clock. And what typically happens is people, you know, kind of forget about the curfew because they're doing whatever what they're doing, whatever they're doing. Security kind of does their, makes their rounds, tells people, hey, you know, you need to go inside. It's curfew. They don't really hassle the seasonal campers, right? Well, we were kind of off away from, you know, the seasonal trailers that we were kind of hanging out at earlier. Security comes around. They're like, you need to go back to your camper, whatever it is. We're like, okay, yeah, cool. Got in the golf carts. We're headed back. And I don't know if they had a miscommunication, some lines got crossed or whatever. But on the way back, security on another golf cart comes flying at us and starts in with this whole, it's after curfew, what are you doing now? Da, 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 da. Which sets off my cousin Connor, who can be kind of a, you know, reactionary, hot-headed kind of person. Middlesex County Police were already there for some unrelated incident.
Of course they were.
Somehow they get involved, and then it just turns into this whole thing, right? And I'm like, what is going on? And I'm trying to like keep my cousin from like blowing his top, you know? Cause I can tell he's about to, like, this is about to get a lot worse. And he's about to escalate things. You know what I mean?
Y'all about to be on Cops.
We're about to be on COPS. We're about to be on Live PD, even though that did not exist at the time. But it's the type of thing you would see on Live PD today, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to, like, back him off. And as I approach, like, this cop stops me and is like, "What are you doing?" I'm just like, "I'm just here with my cousin. I'm visiting. We're trying to go back to our camp." I wasn't even – I will say I was drunk. I wasn't that drunk, okay? Mm-hmm. He's like, "Have you drinking tonight?" And I was like – and I was just honest with him. I said, "Yeah, I've been drinking."
No shit, guy.
And the thing was, like, if I had been driving the golf cart, I might have been reluctant to divulge that. I don't know if you can get a DUI on a golf cart on a private campground. I didn't know that at the time. I'm not sure if you can today. I really couldn't tell you. But all I know is I was a passenger. Yes, I was slightly intoxicated. He was like, "Will you take this breathalyzer?" And I was like, "Okay, what am I going to say? No." I mean, like, okay, I guess that I'm going to be drunk. You know, I'm going to blow it. Wait, I know that.
I'm curious what my number is.
I mean, yeah, I was like, "I told you I was drinking." I didn't say this, but I'm like, in my head, I'm going, "I told you I was drinking. If you want to do a breathalyzer, fine. I know I wasn't driving the golf cart, so I guess you can waste your time, drag me in for a drunk in public. I don't know how that works here, but what are my options, really?" So, in retrospect, I might have refused that, but yep. Mm-hmm. At the time, I did it, and it was like, he was like, "You're intoxicated, sir." And I was like, "Yep."
Yeah, no shit. I remember that part where I told you that already?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And he was like, "Sit down over there." And I was like, "Can I just tell you, sit down over there?" I was like, "Okay." So he's not letting me do anything here in this situation, apparently. Somehow or another, here's where I'm going to thread the needle, okay? I know it sounds like I've gone on a huge tangent here, but there is an actual narrative to this whole nonsense storyline that I've been spewing here. And it's that my Aunt Wanda, so Connor's mom, she has been having these marital troubles with Bruce, right? Longtime husband of now going on 20 years, I would say. Mm-hmm. She had met this guy who we're going to call Jim.
Okay.
About the same age as Bruce. So kind of like if she had an older man thing going on or what, but got Jim, friends with Bruce, long time seasonal camper here at Grays Point, hung out all the time, like every weekend for years. And it was like, they're spending more and more time together to the point where it was like, it was just the two of them sometimes spending time together, mm-hmm. arousing some suspicion. Mm-hmm. Well, Jim, is kind of friends cozy with the management here at Grays Point. So he has some influence, let's say. And when Wanda catches wind of this situation here with the police and the security here at the campground, she kind of pulls some strings and Jim goes over and smooth things over here. Mm-hmm. And basically says, "Hey, look, I can vouch for these people," right? And they're like, "Oh, okay."
Says they're okay, so
yeah,
everybody be cool now.
Yeah, and they kind of take his word for it, and it was like, "Oh, you know, Jim did us a solid here." Well, I mean, Jim was kind of trying to get in good with the family because he and Wanda, my aunt, turns out had a little bit of a thing going on.
Oh.
And this little bit of a thing escalated as her marriage with Bruce deteriorated.
Ah.
And I shit you not, long story short, Wanda and Bruce, they parted company, they split up, and she kind of started seeing Jim on the regular. It was like this thing that wasn't talked about for a while, and then it was like, oh, this is now official. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it was kind of this little local scandal here at it started with just what the campground, right? Who knew about it, talked and rumors, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then like kind of the extended family starts to ask questions. And I'm like, I was definitely in a few awkward, uncomfortable situations with the two of them, right? Where I'm like, I can tell, I know something's going on. And it's not my business. I don't want to say anything about it. But if I get pressed, like, I don't really know what to say. You know what I mean?
What were the awkward situations?
Where it would be, like, just the three of us. Like, I'd be hanging out with my Aunt Wanda, who, again, I grew up with, spent a lot of time in her house. I'm very, very close. Very close to, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of a second mother to me, basically.
Gotcha.
And it would be one of those, like, the night is winding down, and we end up back at Jim's camper, and people are sort of dropping off one by one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it just comes down to the three of us, and it's like, well, three's a crowd. You know what I mean? Like, it's clear that she has no intentions of leaving.
Huh.
And they're hanging out. They're kind of flirting, and I mean, you know when you know.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I really didn't make any judgments about that. I knew that, you know, she was in a bad situation with her marriage. I mean, Bruce was my uncle, but he was basically somebody she married in the late 80s when I was very – he was not a blood relative. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, gotcha.
And, I mean, yes, it's – I grew up – this is the kind of familial unit that I recognized, the two of them. But I knew that they went through a lot of shit, and I thought – as I said earlier, that was just sort of the dynamics of their relationship, but turns out it went a lot deeper. You know, they were both pretty unhappy in that marriage. And, yeah, like I said, they split, and Wanda and Jim are officially an item. And I got to tell you, it was probably shortly thereafter. there's this, this shitty little motel located just, I mean, not even, I mean, right next to the campground, right? Mm-hmm. It's like your first stop before you get to Grays Point, the campground, called the Pilot House. Has not been renovated, well, at the time, had not been renovated since probably the early 70s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really very ramshackle, but very charming at the same time. They had a breakfast buffet that we would crash on occasion when we were really hungover because it was easily accessible through the woods, again, on golf carts from this campground. But had never stayed there, you know, as a motel. But they had like a ballroom that you could rent out. And my Aunt Wanda had her 50th birthday here for whatever reason, mm-hmm. rented out the ballroom at this. I mean, it looked like something from like a 70s movie. You know what I mean? had that certain charm, but also sleaze to it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where, I mean, shortly after she had divorced Bruce, that was official. But yeah, at this 50th birthday party, Jim proposed to my Aunt Wanda.
Wow.
In front of all her friends and family, basically. And, it was quite the scene. It was a lot of fun, actually. And I have since heard that they have renovated the Pilot House as of a few years ago, which breaks my heart It's just the type of establishment that should never be renovated. But it is what it is. And it's just so weird. I mean, reflecting back on all this stuff, hell, I mean, there were some major life events that transpired for really other people, not me. But that I was sort of, you know, a supporting character.
Like a witness to, like the narrator point of view.
Point of view character, yeah. Potentially. And I don't know. It's, I think enough time has passed. I mean, we stopped going to this place circa, I would say 2013. Mm-hmm. Something happened. Some drama went down where Wanda and Jim basically got kicked out of this. Like they sold their trailer, and were told in no uncertain terms, you're not really welcome back. I don't even know the full story there, but in any case, it's just one of those things I have some nostalgia for, but at the same time, I'm like, that was like kind of fucked up, you know? Like there was a lot of stuff that I didn't really need to be a party to, but makes for good stories, I hope. So it's just weird looking back on that time. And I don't know that I necessarily wish that it hadn't ended, but I sort of wish I was still the type of person who hadn't been in the intervening years kind of crippled by anxiety, PTSD, depression, all this stuff, you know, that I could still do those kinds of things and be as carefree as I was back then.
So like these days you would never consider going and doing any of that?
Not really.
Like you wouldn't enjoy it like you did then?
I wouldn't. And that's, I mean, for a lot of reasons that are probably for a different podcast, but that is something I miss, just being that kind of person. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So anyway, that is what it is. And that's sort of, I mean, when you talk about summers, what you did over the summer, it's often with a kind of wistful mm-hmm. attitude and tone. Like it's about a lot of times about childhood, about coming of age, growing up, good memories you have that you can't necessarily recapture, and trying to make new memories and new traditions. And, you know, it's like you can't go home again in a lot of ways. But I don't know. I'm not trying to end on a down note. But
no, it's not a down note. It's just real.
It can be sort of melancholy talking about this stuff.
You know, I could see that whole trailer park on the water as like a dark, like comic book, like a mini series.
Yeah.
Right. Like
one that lasted, one that it was like a mini series.
Like Jason Aaron writes it, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's just, there's kind of an idea there, right?
Mm-hmm. It's like sort
the,
of a,
the interpersonal relationships and the politics of this little campground.
There's a real underbelly to this mm-hmm. sort of what's supposed to be a very casual recreational type of getaway.
That's interesting.
And I think I experienced that in some ways. I do have a drink recipe that
from those days.
Of Gray's Point. Which I'll share with you again to just ensure that we don't end on a down note. If anyone is still listening, that is it, and it is called again to,
catfish,
you know, no, but to keep it as morbid as possible here, it's called Shaken Baby.
Oh Lord.
Yeah. And don't let the name deceive you because it's, I mean, I think colloquially it's called different things, and I think it's probably like, you know, when people talk about jungle juice, right? Everybody has a recipe for what this is, okay?
All right.
So let me tell you my version of that, which we all here at this campground referred to as shaken baby. And literally be like, oh, what are y'all doing tonight? Well, we're going to make a baby.
Oh, gosh.
And everyone knew what you meant. It was like, oh, okay, okay, all right, I'll be back in a few hours, you know. So what you do is you have to start out with a large plastic jug with a twist on top, essentially. Mm-hmm. I like to recommend when you go into your supermarket of choice, your Kroger, your Publix, your Winn-Dixie, your Giant, whatever it is, in that like weekly specials aisle that they all have, you see like your Snyder's of Hanover pretzels, right?
Yes.
In a plastic jug. Or you see like a big Utz cheese noodles kind of thing, right? In a big plastic jug. You get one of those.
Oh. Big.
Okay. Yeah. Whether you're interested in the food contents or not, typically we weren't. We would get the cheese doodles, you know, big plastic tin, dump them shits in the river, basically. I mean, eat as many of them as you can, whatever, have people just leave it out. Try to make some progress on it. You know, you don't want to waste food. But at the end of the day, that's not the point. You just want to, all right? And they're kind of hard to acquire otherwise. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Short of making a special trip. You know, so we would often dump out the pretzels or the cheese doodles, who cares. Wash it out, soap and water, real good, get it clean. You want to fill it about, I would say, halfway with ice.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to need 6 lemons cut up, squeezed, 6 limes, same story, cut up, squeezed, into that jug. You need 2 cups of sugar.
Oh, God.
Into the jug. I recommend, many people exclude this, but I strongly recommend 1 jar of maraschino cherries. Just get the jar, dump it right in there, okay?
Juice and everything.
Juice and everything. Just dump it right in. Stems, juice, everything.
Okay.
You know, no special preparation there. And then, this is the important element, of course, you're going to want to get your favorite flavored vodka of choice. I have used, like, absolute mandarin, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to say grape probably turned out the best, although you can't always find, like, grape-flavored vodka. We did one time, and I feel like that was more of a novelty. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, like, calls for a fifth of vodka. I would say that given the amount of people who are going to be drinking this and the size of your jug, more like a liter, okay? So anyway, anywhere from a fifth to a liter of flavored vodka, fruit-flavored vodka. Dump that in there. And then I, again, also optional, but I would like to throw in some just supplemental fruit. Typically we would get like a whole pineapple and slice it up, throw the pineapple chunks in there.
Mm-hmm.
Highly recommend getting a pineapple slicer if you're going to do that. Don't sit there, waste your time slicing up a real pineapple. Get a peeler. Throw that in there. Works real well. And I mean, beyond that, you get all the ingredients in the jug, seal it up real good. You got to wrap it up in a towel, okay? Because what's going to happen is you get a lot of condensation off of this. It gets wet. It gets slippery. So you got to wrap it up in a towel, swaddle it like a baby. You swaddle this jug like a baby, and you shake it. You shake it and shake it excessively, and you actually make it kind of a communal experience. You pass it around the room, and everybody kind of gets a turn shaking the baby.
Gotcha.
I said it. And the object of this, you want to make sure that the sugar, that again, 2 cups of sugar that you added to this, that it's fully dissolved. So you look at the bottom of this jug. If you still see sugar in the bottom of that, you got to keep shaking it.
It's not ready yet.
Until it's not ready yet, because you got to make sure. I mean, you don't want anything to just settle you want everything mixed properly.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, we're not supposed to admit this, but I will admit it here on this podcast. We would cheat a little bit and actually stir rather than shake.
Yes.
Because you get a little bit bored, you know?
I mean, like, how long would the shaking process happen? I mean, that seemed like it would take
a good hour
or something.
It's the type of thing where, like, if you added too much ice, or if you didn't add enough vodka, it would, like, you know, it could potentially, or somebody was just a real wuss when they were shaking it. Like, it could take a while for that sugar to dissolve, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you would get to the point where it's just like, fuck, man. And you would just get, like, a spatula or something and just, you know, stir it up. And once that sugar is dissolved, you want to put that – you want to put this in the freezer, or if there's not room in the freezer, just put it in the fridge. For, I would say, let it chill an hour, ideally 2 hours. Often you can't wait that long. Mm-hmm. But it just – it's just, you know, everything kind of mixes and –
right. The longer it sits, the better it gets.
The longer it sits, the better it gets. But reality is most people can't wait that long.
You're trying to get drunk. It's Friday
night. You're trying to get drunk. Shit. Yeah. And, you know, you're having a good time with this. So in any case, let's say you've let it sit for an hour or two, bring it out. And, I mean, then you just kind of pass it around, drinking it. It's just straight vodka, ice, and whatever fruit you added to it.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, y'all didn't have any sort of, like, mixer, so...
There's no real mixer, so you would think this is going to taste kind of wretched, right? I mean, but surprisingly, it's... I mean, it basically tastes like fruit punch.
Yeah.
Punch, yeah. So, I mean, there would be times we would, like, literally just drop straws in it and drink it that way. Occasionally, solo cups come out, and, you know, it goes pretty quick once that happens. You know, as much as, you know, you've made here in this giant-ass jug, doesn't last long. So, yeah.
Wow.
Make shake it, baby. If you've got a lot of people together and, you know, you want just a fun drink. You don't actually get that drunk off of it because you have so many people who are... you know,
drinking out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things where if you've already got a pretty good buzz, you know, it's fun to top off with, I guess you could say. So that's a,
wow.
That's the shaken baby recipe.
I might try that at my next, you know, cookout or something.
I always wanted to try it with, like I said, the fruit was optional. We typically would do pineapple. I always wanted to do like watermelon, you know.
I was going to say watermelon would be good.
Yeah. The lemons and limes are a must, like that. You always have to use 6 lemons, 6 limes. That's just what I was told by everybody. But beyond that, it was sort of a free for all. So I wanted to use watermelon, but we never really got the opportunity. I think we had tried cantaloupe and honeydew, which I don't know how well that. I don't think that really mixes that well, but it's just whatever, you know, it's a bullshit drink. So it's kind of anything goes, but yeah, give it a shot sometime during your summer, festivities.
Wow. I like it. I mean, I think there's been a little something for everybody here tonight.
God, what else?
What else?
Have you any questions? It's a lot.
I mostly want to see a picture of catfish.
I could probably, you know, like I said, you've stalked my Facebook pictures. I feel like,
I don't think I saw anybody that looked like a catfish though. I probably would have remembered that.
Here's the thing. I don't know that it came across so well in pictures. It was just one of those, like, an observation that somebody made one night.
All right.
And just sort of stuck. And I will say, and this goes for anyone who's friends with me on Facebook, look, I really have no secrets. If you've looked at any photos, if you see me in a golf cart in any it is on Facebook at any point. I guarantee you it was at this campground. If I was in a yellow Daredevil t-shirt, it was probably a night I was I could not recall today, because that turned into somewhat of a tradition as well. It was just one of those, if I wore that shirt, it was like, oh, you must be getting down tonight. Just one of those inside jokes.
Must be shaking some babies tonight.
Yeah, it was one of those inside jokes, you know what I mean? Where it was like not even a shirt that looked very good on me, but it was like if I wore it, I was going to party.
Your
kind of
thing.
Shirt. Yeah, it was my drinking shirt. So I've still got it. It doesn't fit anymore, of course. And that's the other thing. Like, this was a time in my life when I was like pretty in shape. And by in shape, I mean just slightly overweight, but it was like as good as I've ever looked, and probably like as tan as I've ever gotten. And I'm the type of person where I don't get skinny and I don't tan. So this was like,
no wonder you think of it so fondly.
As close to a miracle as I've ever achieved, just physically. You know what I mean? So anyway, that's maybe that's something I can work on. It gets a lot harder the older you get.
Hell
you know,
yeah,
it's like
it's
an uphill battle trying to deal with weight and appearances and everything else.
Oh, Jesus, that's a whole nother podcast.
That's another podcast too, which maybe next month we'll talk about.
I was gonna say, like, can we have like a body image episode?
Jesus, I think I might have body dysmorphic disorder. I don't know, a touch of that.
A little bit, probably.
Yeah, don't we all?
I know it. All right. Well, I enjoyed that. I really did. It's, you painted a very vivid picture.
And I don't know if anyone got anything out of this. It's just maybe if you were mowing your lawn or doing something really mindless, this could
just distract you from it.
Distract you from it. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's Talking Pop. I mean, this is what we do.
I've enjoyed it. I've needed it. It's like, tell me some great stories from the good old days and let me drift away for a little bit.
Jesus. I just want to do rails. I want to fuck this waiter. I want to leave my husband.
Oh, shit. All right, Tim.
All right, Jenny. You are my audience. I will just say, above all else, this was tailored as much as possible to you. So if you got something out of it,
I did. I enjoyed it.
I'm very satisfied. So,
I'll probably bother you for a lot more stories. I'll be like,
oh my God.
I feel like shit, Tim. Tell me one of them crazy camp stories.
Well, I could tell you about, I could also tell you about using grapefruit juice as a mixer and not realizing that like enhances the effects of alcohol or whatever else you've done.
Oh my God.
Apparently it like inhibits some kind of enzyme in your liver that helps process substances. Let's put it that way. So, you know, you're not, everything basically hits you a lot harder if you're consuming grapefruit or grapefruit juice in some form or fashion. So
I wish you would not have told me that.
Well, this is why I had a lot of nights that I literally don't remember that were just blackout, to the point that me and my cousin, my younger cousin, Matt's girlfriend, Chelsea, who would – we'd be hanging out probably hitting the bottle harder than most people, would be like, you know, we blacked out last weekend when we did this. You know what we should do is make a list of our activities tonight and then – in the morning, compare notes and see if we remember any of this shit. And sure enough, we did not. And our list became very illegible. It was like one of those. We each of us independently started a list, numbered, here's something that happened, right? Just examples. And we would, you know, it was like it started out as a joke. We would laugh about it. And then it was like, The next morning was like, I remember through number three. I have 10 things written down. I can't read 7 through 10. You know what I mean? This is what we would do.
Then try to figure out what the fuck it said.
This is, I mean, it's funny to talk about, but I'm dead serious. Yeah. And it's not really a good feeling.
Yeah, I feel you. I don't like to not know what happened. That bothers me a lot.
Yeah, it's like, I'm told I had a good time. Yeah. Number one, I don't remember it. And number two, if I was like a total obnoxious asshole,
yeah,
I don't know. And I don't like not knowing that.
No.
So, anyway.
I agree.
Yeah. Keep us, folks, if you're going to be tricked.
One thing I do remember that we did recently was an episode of Talking WCW, the latest episode. Wrestling feed. We didn't mention it in the live reads because I wanted to kind of save it towards the end because it just came out week. So you and I and Greg looked at Dustin Rhodes and we talked about my favorite match of all time. And it's wonderful. So you should go and download that from PlayStation Wrestling.
We defended that match as performance art for the masses. I would just stress that Dustin Rhodes has been bleeding for his art for many years, for nigh on over 20 years, in fact. So lest you think that his performance at All or Nothing, the great bloodbath that he had with his younger sibling Cody, was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Oh, no. He's been at it for a long time, bled for his art, bled for his job, in fact.
Not that you'll see any of that blood, but it does exist somewhere in the archives.
The cowards need to release the unedited version of the match in question.
It's called the Schiavone cut.
The Schiavone, the Noah Schiavone cut. That's right. put that in the hidden gems, you cowards.
Yes, please. What else? Have you done anything since then that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I should have an episode of Conversation Comics, which is the manager Todd Weber's regular gig, coming up here shortly. We are closing out the Dark Phoenix saga with, Uncanny X-Men issue 137 and sort of the apocrypha surrounding that. We're going to talk about the one shot known as Phoenix, the Untold Story as well, which is kind of an infamous recounting of the behind-the-scenes events and the unpublished original ending to that story.
Oh.
Yeah, awesome. Pretty infamous. Yeah, is one of those things that is very rarely done in the world of comics publishing. They said, we changed the ending of this story and here's what it originally looked like. So we're going to take a look at those in tandem. It's going to be one kind of extra long episode. We're doing this because, I mean, this is one of the most infamous, famous, notable superhero comics of all time. That is not hyperbole on my part. That is just the historical truth. So we're trying to do it justice. Going to be very difficult. I think we've done the best we can, and I'm pretty proud of that. Should be coming your way soon on PlayStation Nation.
Probably a better use of your time than going to see the new Dark Phoenix movie.
Oh, gosh.
So if you want to know, like, the real shit, listen to the pod and skip the movie.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Like, I kind of want the movie to be – I have no faith it's going to be in anywhere – close to good, right? But I want it to be an absolute disaster on the order of like an X-Men Origins Wolverine, which is a fantastically shitty movie to sit down and watch with friends. I mean, it's hysterical.
Right.
It's like, you know, Batman and Robin levels of just being able to dunk on and laugh about this movie, you know? And I kind of want, if a movie is going to be bad, to achieve those heights rather than be just kind of dumb, mediocre, shitty.
Yeah, like sad bad.
Sad bad. That's a great way of putting it. I feel like Dark Phoenix the movie is going to be sad bad. Oh. So, and yeah, I've read reviews and I'm like, I want reviews to be telling people, go out and see this. It's so spectacularly bad. You have to see it. It's more like, yeah, this just sucks.
Sad.
So that is sad, bad by definition.
Anything else?
We will be recording another episode of the Marvel Age podcast. Myself, Nick Duke, host of that program, the aforementioned manager, Todd Weber, and Russell Sellers, getting together this weekend, a few days from our recording, Jenny. So I would say within a few days of this episode you're hearing now dropping, look for another edition of Marvel Age, the podcast as well. We're going to be delving into, I think, the year 1971 in Marvel Comics, if I am correct. So yeah, first half of 1971. Coming up on Marvel Age.
Awesome.
So, fun stuff, yeah. Listen also as well to the Songs with Friends podcast with our former guests on last episode, Steve and Kelly. As I said, they broke down Bob Seger's Night Moves and Third Eye Blind's Semi-Charmed Life from 1998. I had a great time listening to that earlier. Gosh, they churn those out so quickly, there might be another episode by the time you're hearing
it. Yeah, probably so.
But yeah, a lot of fun with our friends, Steve and Kelly.
All right, I think that about does it. Thank you for talking to me. I appreciate this very much.
Thank you, Jenny. It's been a lot of fun here tonight, as they all are, on Talking Pop.